the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
This is public radio for the critical thinker. KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and kpfk.org.
Personally wish that unions didn't have to devote so much resources to politics and electoral fights. But yes, we do have to dedicate a lot of resources to changing the hearts and minds of politicians. But I think what's more important than that is recognizing that the limits of politics and the limits of the electoral cycle are important, but it is more important to be able to build community and coalitions with other workers.
Memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down.
Good morning, and welcome to another Working Week. This is KPFK's Working Voices. I'm your host, Joe Ayala, president of NABIT CWA Local 53.
And I'm your co-host, Marissa Remsky of CWA Local 9003.
And in this morning's show, our executive producer, Dan McCrory, interviews Fired Up About Unions author, Cole Rockert, about her new book. And Steve Zeltzer brings us a sample of speeches from the Teamster National Black Caucus Convention in New Orleans. All this and more coming up. This is Working Voices.
First up this morning, Steve Zeltzer takes us to the Teamsters National Black Caucus Convention in New Orleans to hear panel speeches from former ATU 1560 President Valerie Jefferson and independent black journalist, New Orleans activist C.C. Campbell Rock.
To all my warehouse men,
this is the message. This is the message.
To all my Class A drivers.
This is the message.
To all unions.
This is the message.
Unite till the end.
This is the message.
So wake up, America.
This is the message.
So wake up, America.
This is the message.
I want to thank all of you for coming today. My name is Steve Zeltzer, and I'm with Work Week Radio, Labor Video. And this meeting is very important tonight, not only for the people here, but the people for this in this country who are facing a very dangerous situation, facing an attack on democratic rights, worker rights, and human rights. And one of the things about New Orleans has a tremendous history. It has a working class history. So one of the things that is a problem in this country is the media. Working people are not finding out about the situation of labor and human rights. We felt that it was important, since the TNBC, Teamsters National Black Caucus, is holding a convention, to have some people from New Orleans talk about what was happening in this region, in New Orleans, Louisiana, and the attack on black representation and redistricting, the attempt to exclude particularly black people from having representation. So our first speaker tonight to greet us is Valerie Jefferson. And Valerie is the was a president of the ATU local here. So welcome, Valerie Jefferson.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see everyone here. I became the ATU local 1560 first lady president in New Orleans, Louisiana. And that's the title I'm glad to hold, because I love my labor union, ATU, during 2019. Of course, during 2019 and 20, we had COVID. COVID hit. And at the same time, we were transferring over to from TransDev, which private, to public on RTA on the New Orleans. And we was doing all that at the same time. And at the same time, we was getting sick. We are the transportation of New Orleans. New Orleans depend on transportation on our TA. So we was compelled to come and do our job, come and pick up our family, our friends, and our community. We was compelled to do that. And we had a push for our TA to take care of us. With the PPE care, we went to the city council. Cindy Wynn, she helped us out a lot. We had different city councilmen helped us out, a lot. But we were still looking for our TA to help us out. And we had to push him. We had to call the international office. We had to call the AFL-CIO. We had to campaign ourselves. End up doing a call to action. We had to do a caravan. We was in the rain to show them and tell them we want to drive these buses. We want to do our job, but we want y'all to take care of us. We want y'all to take care of us before we can take care of this city and our family. And results, we had an instructor died. We had a supervisor died. We had, over 100 drivers literally got sick. I caught COVID three times. But nevertheless, we still pushed. We pushed. We won our call to action. We won that. We got a PPE. But we had to do all of that for the company to take care of us. Then we immediately went into contract negotiation. We went into contract negotiation with ATU Local 1560 and RTA. The storm Ida came. So, and RTA still was emergency mode because we didn't have no lights, no electronic, right? They used RTA buses for cooling system. So we had to go to every part of the city, park the bus, have the bus on, and have the AC running. And we had cold water in there for people could get on the bus and cool off and drink cold water. At the same time, guess what? We were asking for our TA to take care of us. The same thing happened again, my brother. We had to go in the negotiation. We had to go in negotiation and push them, hold them accountable to take care of us. Then in the meantime, we signed an agreement, but our TA did not honor that full agreement. And that's when I got terminated. First, they terminated the COO, and we was in the middle of the negotiation contract. They terminated the COO. Then, within less than an hour, I got terminated. Mm. The CEO said that I was a workplace violence, right? And it took them like 3 hours to discipline me. They didn't call no police. They didn't call no security. They even looked at my record. I didn't even have a complaint in my record. They want to know what was in my record. Say, your record don't have nothing. And I said, I ain't doing nothing. What you talking about? So I had to call the international on the phone. They represent me and all that good stuff. In the meantime, that was in September the 8th, 2021. What is this? August 2026. Mm. I'm still fighting for my job. The community, I found out within these 5 years, it'd be 5 years, September the 8th. Thank God that we got a new mayor. We got the city councilman that stand up, speak up for the community. Thank God for them. And we have a new RTA commissioner board. And they're very active. And I'm glad for that. I'm glad for that. They are looking out for the workers. That's what we need for people to look out for the workers, because that when management and the union work together for the betterment of the community, that's when the wheel will turn correctly. The wheel will turn in communication with everybody. Everybody is important. Everybody is valuable. When we realize that it's not about us, it's not about you, it's not about you, it's about all of us together. When we get that mindset that we are servants, right. We're not leaders. So right now that we are working, the union is working to get my job back. We have a mayor, Mayor Helena Moreno. She's a worker. In fact, when we when the NAACP went before the Transportation Committee, was speaking up for labor, she was a city councilman then. And she spoke up for the labor. And she's doing the same thing now, just like the city councilman and the commissioners, that they're holding the executive accountable and you're holding union accountable. I don't blame everything on the company. Because the union is supposed to take care of the members. Right. The union is a business. We have to realize it's a business. And we're supposed to act accordingly. The money is not your money. Huh. The money is not your money. Huh. You know, it's all our money. The money is there for the benefit and the growth of the business of the union. It's for us to be trained. It's for us to promote ourselves internally and externally. It's for us to be promoted in outreach in the community, for we can tell the community about the union. You think the company going to tell the community about the union?
No,
the company not. It's for us to do that.
Right.
With that said, we had two of my locals in my region, Austin, Texas, was in their negotiation for over a year. They got a tentative agreement now. Whew, that was a long battle. But right now, Jackson, Mississippi is still in a fight. And they went before the city council. This is why I'm so glad that we had city councilmen right now in New Orleans that fight for labor. That there has all those city councilmen sitting in their seat. They had the laborers who was in the audience. The mayor was sitting on the left hand side. And the company MV went and spoke up for how they are negotiating with the union, how they are trying to come up with agreement, what they paying the union members. But nobody not saying, yeah, that you get, they asking for $24, but you bringing in worker from out of the state, paying them $36 and up, paying them room and board, their hotel fee, paying them their plane tickets, but you refuse to pay the citizen of Jackson, Mississippi, who taking care of the people in transportation, who paying taxes and voting. And I'm looking at the city councilman, ain't nobody asking them questions. Well, if you're doing it for them, why you not doing it for the workers right here? These my constituents. Why you not taking care of them? Then turn around, what their contract look like with Jackson, Mississippi. So Jackson should be fining them. If Jackson waived their fees and they fine, well, who getting that money? Who saving money? Why the citizen, the hardworking people that work for Jackson, Mississippi, is being left out, being mistreated. So if the companies, the private companies who make it over $1 million profit after the overhead, they make it over $1 million profit. If they not taking care of the workers, who will? The union have to step up, hold the company accountable. We can't fight against one another. We can't do that. We got to join together and hold the company accountable. Then the company, I like it. I like it when the company hold me accountable because you're making me a better person. But when I use that same book on you, don't get mad with me, brother. Don't get mad with me, sister, because I'm reading the same book you read. If I supposed to wear a red jacket, and right here, and I see that you supposed to wear a white one. Well, you wear your white jacket. Because I got my red on. That means you get mad with me because I'm questioning you. I'm holding you accountable. What you just did to me. That's how I feel right now. That when we hold each other accountable and we hold up to it, it could be the union side or the company side. It doesn't matter with me. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. When we work together like that, we ain't got to worry about 47. Because we're going to come together, we're going to promote each other, we're going to do outreach out there with our family, our friends, our church. The church got to step up.
Yeah.
The church is the light of the community. I'm getting excited, man. I'm getting excited. The church will be the light of the community. Right. Then you can get that information. You go to your job, you go to your home, you go to your neighborhood. That's what it's all about, being a laborer in God's vineyard. Come on, brother, get this, Michael. You know I'm getting carried away.
it's all about this message. For all of you, it's protected. I'm in this labor movement and it's steadily impressive. So wake up, America, time for roll call. An injury to one is injury to all. Organize, educate, motivate against corporate America and serve them on a plate. You ask, who are we? I'm straight middle class. Register to vote, cause this is your chance to annihilate and increase union density with intensity. You don't have to tell me. You ask, who are we? I'm a straight union member, warehouse selector, putting this together. I pay dues, still play by the rules. Point of view, never walked in these shoes. So
wake up, America, what we gonna do?
This is the message, this is the message.
So wake up, America,
what we gonna do? This is the message,
what?
This is the message.
So wake up, America.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
We're all in this struggle together. We all need to be unified in the struggle. We have to educate each other, and that's really critical. People have to know what's happening. Working people have to know what's happening. We have to build solidarity. And one of the things that everyone knows about is what happened with Katrina in New Orleans, the disaster that man-made created, you know, when they did not properly maintain the levees. And they flooded the mainly black community here in New Orleans. And as a result of that flood, many of the people here had to leave temporarily. And C.C. Campbell Rock, an independent journalist and a fighter for human rights, worker rights, was a journalist who came to San Francisco in the Bay Area, and that's how I met her. She was working with the San Francisco Bayview, which is a black community newspaper, which gets information out and breaks the information blockade about what's happening to black people in San Francisco and around the country. We need more black media. We need to get the stories out and worker stories. Otherwise, you don't find out about what's really going on. So welcome, C.C. Campbell Rock.
Made to talk about the redistricting problem we have, what's happening with our labor unions here, and resegregation. But let me correct you on that. We're not resegregated. We've been segregated, okay? So, and when Katrina hit and 100,000 of us left, I think 75,000 may have come back, and we came back to gentrification. The property taxes are off the hook, and so we're fighting with that. And let me say this. This Louisiana has been pivotal for civil rights movement. How many of you guys know that Martin Luther King Jr. came to Baton Rouge and talked to T.J. Jemison, who had the first bus boycott, 1951. Martin Luther King came here, and ILA, International Longshoremen's Association, Chink Henry, had a big check for him so he could continue. The SCLC was incorporated here. Louisiana has been a focal point for civil rights, but I want to share with you what happened. I'm going to take it way back to the Louisiana Constitutional Convention of 1898. We met here to establish the supremacy of the white race, and the white race constitutes the Democratic Party of the state. Well, back then, you guys know the Democrats were the racists and vice versa. Therefore, in my judgment, no separation whatever between the interests of the state and those of the Democratic Party. Furthermore, in his address, Louisiana Supreme Court Justice Sims. Furthermore, in his address on the convention's accomplishments, Sims noted, our mission was, in the first place, to establish the supremacy of the white race in this state to the extent to which it could be legally and constitutionally done. So here we are in 2026, and our legislature is upholding this standard. They just got rid of the second majority-minority seat that we had. That was only put together, last year or 2 years ago, because we only had one congressional seat. White people comprise 57% of our population. Black people comprise 33%. So tell me why the congressional delegation is like 95% white, and our legislature, I think it's the Senate, is 83% white, and our state house is 68% white. So the math is not mathing, but this thing that happened in 1898 has carried forth. We never really were integrated, but one of the good things I can say about Step Up and other organizations now, today, are working across the divide. We had a big battle over voting rights here. We're still battling over voting rights. So as far as our labor situation is, I'm so glad you guys are here because our state is still hanging on to $7.25 an hour. Our workers who work in the French Quarter that we like to go and party, $2 an hour plus tips. So they busted our nursing union as we knew it. So we had strong unions. We had musicians unions. We had the riverfront, the waterfront unions. We had all of that. And now we are going backwards. And so Louisiana's labor landscape today reflects another truth. Black workers have anchored the state's most active labor movements in generations, from waterfront unions to hospitality workers to musicians union. While the state does not publish a formal count of unions led by black leaders, New Orleans has one of the strongest traditions of black labor leaderships in the South. They fought for fair wages, safe workplace, and dignity on a job. So here we are. We got problems in our labor sector. We've got problems with gentrification, representation. As I was saying, Troy Carter is our only majority-minority person. We had Cleo Fields until Louisiana versus Calais went to the Supreme Court. It was brought by 11 non-white people, and that's how they call themselves, and went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, well, Cleo Fields' district is racially gerrymandered. We can't have that. But you did it because you had been cheating black people out of the representation for decades. That was the second go-around for Cleo Fields. He was in Congress in 1993, and they did the same thing. Okay, so tell me how it is that partisan gerrymandering is not racial gerrymandering, because it's the same thing. And so hopefully the labor leaders, everybody can, we can come together and make the Supreme Court understand that the math is not math. And you know, we have a trifecta. The Republicans have a trifecta. They own the governor's mansion. They own the state house. They own the state senate and the congressional delegation. All of that is Lily White, if you will. So we call on labor unions and everyone else to come and help us, because this is, we can't live like this. We cannot. And as I said, our state is 57% white, 33% black. And if you put in the other minorities combined with the black people, then we're 48% of the population. So those are some of the challenges we have. Gentrification is eating us up. So those are the things that we're facing. We do have a predominantly African American city council. They're doing good. Our mayor is a Latina, and so they understand what's at stake. So we have to fight in the courts for every little thing, you know. So here we are, and we're in bad shape. I say that everybody who's behind the cotton curtain, we're back to where we were, probably in 1930. And so we have to join together, as Steve said, across all industries and elements and biracial, everybody. And we need to fight the powers that be, because the Supreme Court is not even following the rule of law. Tell me why that Cassidy, who was one of our senators, tell me why he voted to put that Attorney General Blanche in place. He had already lost the race. Why are you going to do that? Everybody was telling me, oh, you know, he's not that bad or whatever. Well, guess what? When he voted to confirm Robert Kennedy, I was through with him. Because this man is a doctor. Mm. And you're going to put Robert Kennedy in there? And I don't know if y'all heard the news, but now they've come up with a different slate of the way you're going to, our children are going to be immunized. They don't want to combine, you know, measles, mumps, and rubella together now. They want three different vaccines plus all the rest of them. So, y'all, we got lots of work to do, is all I'm saying. And I don't mind speaking truth to power, and we want to do everything we can to own the narrative, because that's what we're going to have to do. Yeah. How many different right-wing networks do you know about? What is it, 4 or 5? Where's ours? Now, Steve has his radio station. That's great. But we need more. We need to own the narrative consistently. We're fighting for fair representation. We're fighting to have decent wages. We're fighting to have equality. And even though Donald Trump has gotten rid of what is diversity, equity, and inclusion, that's what we should still have. And it boggles my mind that people would rather vote for a felon and a criminal and a thief rather than put that black woman in office. And if you go back and look at the executive orders that she convinced Biden to put in place, it's everything we needed. They said, you don't want you to be woke, but you better be woke.
Right.
Because this ain't nothing nice that's going on right here. Am I lying? So, you know, we need to reclaim our, you know, land and our country. We need to take our country back. And the reason why Donald Trump has been elected twice is on the back of racism. Mm-hmm. It's about whiteness. We got problems. Yeah. Do you know recently, what it was, on the 11th? They found a young lady hanging in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And December 2025, it was a young man hung in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I guess, like Billie Holiday say, southern trees bear strange fruit still. Mm-hmm. So we have to begin, y'all. We need you guys' help. Let me end it right there. We need your help.
The history of the fight against racism is really a critical part of labor's history. The fight against racism is a fight for all workers.
Exactly.
The fight for the black workers in this country is a fight for all workers.
Exactly.
And we need to mobilize the labor movement in this country to stand up and make that fight, because labor has the power. And what disturbs me the most, one of the things that disturbed me the most, is in Trump's first term, he was making racist attacks, and not one national union leader called him out. Not one. My union, the CWA, all these national unions, they're silent. What are they afraid of? Thank you, brothers and sisters.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel, where you can now go to see the entire panel discussion. And for more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can always go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net.
Hi, this is Lila Downs. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, globally on kpfk.org.
Si porque te quiero, quieres llorona que yo.
In the next half of the hour this morning, our Working Voices executive producer, Dan McCrory, discusses the problems and possibilities of the modern labor movement in an interview with author Cole Rockarts about her new book, Fired Up About Unions.
This is Dan McCrory for Working Voices, talking to Cole Rockarts, who's written her first book, and it's called
Fired Up About Unions.
And what caused you to want to write this book?
Well, I think we're in a particular moment in labor history right now where there's a big uptick in interest, particularly among young workers, really in many places in the world, but particularly in North America. I live in Los Angeles, which is a great union town. And I'm originally from Canada, and I'm just seeing workers across the US and Canada start to get interested in forming their own unions, in reforming their current unions. as well as just getting more broadly interested in labor movement and social justice issues.
And you work for a union, I'm told?
I do, yes. I work for a California healthcare union. And we in particular have lots of members who fight not only for their contracts, but for their patients. And I think a lot of union contracts are focused obviously on wages and very material things. But in recent years, there's been a great resurgence in kind of the concept of bargaining for the common good and making sure that the things that union workers win in their contracts also kind of stream out to the community as well. And we see this for teachers who go on strike for their students, the same way we see it for healthcare workers going on strike for their patients and to improve the healthcare system.
Your union is really solidly behind single payer, if I remember correctly.
Yes, yes, that's true. I think particularly in the U.S., coming from the Canadian context, the healthcare system is pay to play. And I know our union, as well as many healthcare unions, want to expand healthcare in Canada, expand drug care and the things that currently aren't covered under our social medicine. And in the U.S., obviously, that means, you know, healthcare should be for all. You shouldn't just have to have a great job to get great access. And so the hope is that one day workers can win healthcare and Medicare for all.
From what I understand, the U.S. is the only industrialized country who doesn't have universal healthcare.
Correct, yes. And obviously, you know, the U.S. is like incredibly well-resourced and rich. And I think particularly coming from the Canadian context, it's my belief and many trade unionists' belief that the government should be able to support its people. And I think there's a great lot of work to be done and a lot of great folks in Medicare alliances and coalitions doing good work to advance that.
Are you still within this, the Canadian system, or have you made that transition?
I'm now, you know, a part of a American healthcare HMO, the whole confusing world that is insurance and copays, et cetera.
How was that for you to maneuver compared to the plan you were used to?
Well, I think it's a lot different. I am one of the lucky people to have great employment benefits and spousal benefits. And so I've been really lucky to be able to benefit from that. But you really do have to have a good job here to get good access to healthcare. And I recognize that a lot of folks in the U.S. don't. So it's quite a challenge.
What other subjects do you address in your book?
Yes. So I've been working in the labor movement for about 10 years now. And I think really the hope of the book is that anyone can pick it up, not just young workers, but anyone new to the labor movement, and get a little bit of a how-to guide, a little bit of historical knowledge of where unions come from, kind of what happened over the past several decades, starting in the 70s. That really whittled down workers' rights, the attacks on unions politically and legislatively, and kind of how they're doing now and why folks should get involved. I think we're at a really great opening and moment where lots of folks are talking about how our systems, from our economic system to our healthcare system to our education system, could be different. And it is a lot to fit in one little book, but the aim is that folks will leave and come away with questions and a lot more information as well.
How does the labor movement differ in Canada compared to here?
Yes, so I touched on it a little bit, but I think there's a big interest in Canada, particularly in like supporting workers through things like socialized medicine. Obviously, it makes the contract bargaining landscape quite different when you don't have to kind of think about direct benefits that are already provided by the state or by the country. I think also our union density is much higher because we've had friendlier labor laws. And I would say our history in having not just the Democrats or the Republicans, but a party in Canada, the New Democrats, that were very intertwined with the labor movement, has made it so that a lot of our labor law is much friendlier to workers than it is in the U.S. We don't have that same history of the Taft-Hartley Act and right to work and the things that have really, really limited American workers' power.
What do you see as the path forward for labor here in the U.S.?
Yes, well, I think it's the same path as in most countries. We've been just seeing lots of attacks on workers, not just in the U.S., but across the globe, anti-immigrant sentiment. And I think the path forward is really to keep organizing, to organize in the political realm, to organize in the legislation and the passing of good laws. I know that there was a big push in recent years to pass the PRO Act that would expand the rights to organize, protect workers. And I think most recently, the thing that I see in my work in the U.S. is really ensuring that once unions have formed, once workers have had their votes, have said, yes, I certify that I want to form a union, making it mandatory to have a time limit on first contracts. I think the experience that I've had in the past year is that workers do everything right. They overcome employer campaigns. They win their union. And then the boss stops that union from forming and says no to a contract. So I think that would be the big thing, is organizing and ensuring that once workers have said, yes, I want to democratically join this organization, being able to ensure that they can actually get the changes that they are seeking at work.
What issues do you see within the labor movement, both positive and negative, as far as being able to move forward?
Yes, I mean, I think naturally unions can be quite protective and protectionist of their members. You know, we have a job to do, which is very laser focused on bettering our conditions, whether that's wages, whether that's expansion of benefits, you know, ensuring due process of discipline. But I also think that because we are so focused on that, it sometimes doesn't allow us the resources to do things that would expand those rights beyond organizing more workers, building that density and union power. And I think, you know, I know that the AFL-CIO has really set some goals in recent years, but lots of folks have said that those goals are falling short, not kind of imaginative enough. And I, you know, I know that the thing of organizing new unions, particularly in the U.S., is not easy work, but it is necessary work. And so I think that would be the critique, would be organizing more, setting really, really broad goals of going into industries that have previously been said, oh, you know, we can't organize that. Oh, that's too challenging. And also having a really like broad coalition of really thinking strategically of which unions should be organizing which workers, and not competing so much for the piece of the pie. I think, as the saying goes, we don't just want a piece of the pie. We want the whole pie, and we also want to sit at the table.
How far off are we from being able to thwart the aims of this political administration? Because obviously they've dipped in, gotten rid of unions. How do we battle that? Or do we? Do we just wait for him to leave office and then try to rebuild? What's the plan?
Yes. Well, it's an easy question as a Canadian who's been in the U.S. for a couple years to answer, I'd say. I've got it all figured out for you folks. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big question. I think, unfortunately, I do personally wish that unions didn't have to devote so much resources to politics and electoral fights. But unfortunately, that is, especially federally right now, the situation that workers are in. I think, you know, what happens in 2028 obviously will have an effect on working people. And we hope that the folks that are getting into office support workers, whether that's raising the minimum wage. But yes, we do have to dedicate a lot of resources to changing the hearts and minds of politicians. But I think what's more important than that is recognizing that the limits of politics and the limits of the electoral cycle are important, but it is more important to be able to build community and coalitions with other workers, whether that's the worker sitting next to you on the job or the worker across the border. And so I think there's a lot of different projects of labor unions right now that are doing really great advocacy work. For example, in LA, with the attacks on immigrant workers, I've seen different unions stepping up and supporting those fights and funding those fights. And I think that the power of the labor movement is that it's not just unionized workers, but also any worker who wants to be a part of the labor movement that can join, even the ones that aren't part of unions that are fighting for broader things, like I mentioned, raising the minimum wage or working to expand, green space in their community, fights for the climate as we see this big transition. And I think that's really the big thing that will get us to the place that we want, whether that's healthcare for all or raising the minimum wage, whatever the community needs in the moment.
You gave the asphalt to him and then looked back at me and said that is a word from the wise ones in me. When you've been here this long, one day you belong. One day you wake up and forget what seemed wrong. At the first day of May, well, it quietly passed by. As the buses ran by the night. And you curse when I say words like living and wage. Say I made my house out of mud, so today. Now the ball field is level. Let's play!
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
There's been a lot of talk about going back to our roots and becoming more militant. Do you think that's a good idea, or do you think we should fall into the capitalist model and just supply and demand kind of thing?
Yes, it's a good question for sure. I think absolutely, hard times call for militant times. I don't claim, and particularly as a union staff person who's never been out on strike myself, you know, strikes are not easy. I'm part of a union whose workers went on strike for 7 months. And that is not an easy thing to do, to give up your paycheck to fight for what you believe in, not only for yourself, but for your patients and your community. And I think that is one of the biggest learnings being in the US, is that I've seen a lot of strikes here more so than I've seen in Canada as a staff person. And so I know that strikes obviously don't always result in everything that the workers want, but we make gains slowly and surely, and sometimes we win. And so I think militancy is absolutely the answer. It's not the easy path. It takes a lot more time. It's a lot more, if you're in a good union, it's a very democratic and slow process. And workers make the choice to strike, not big U unions and their leaders and big organizations. It's the workers themselves. So I think militant times call for militant actions.
California being a blue state, there has been some criticism of labor's role within the Democratic Party, especially as delegates to the party. They're seen as barking junkyard dogs with a lot of bark and no bite. And I'm wondering if the role of labor might be better served getting out front and leading the charge.
Yes, I mean, I think, again, as someone who's not super familiar with all the mechanics of the Democratic Party, I do think that in even the past 2 years, you know, Zohran in New York and the kind of leftist flank of the Democratic Party, most of whom aren't from the labor movement directly, but we're seeing more of that. I think that's the answer, is when Democrats are actually, connected to their constituents and fighting for workers, a lot of people rally behind them. And so we are seeing a little bit of a fight. And I think that being really cognizant of this whole third wave, the business as usual Democrats hasn't worked. It hasn't been working for decades. And so I'm really excited, despite the fact that I can't personally vote. I'm really excited to see the energy of folks that are working class people joining the political realm and really remembering their roots and fighting for the things that their communities want. And, you know, obviously it's a big machine and it's not always perfect, but I'd like to see more union members running for office for sure.
Do you plan on keeping your career in the U.S. or are you planning to go home one of these days and maybe spread the wisdom that you picked up here?
Well, Dan, I'm not sure if my parents put you up to that, but for now, I'm rooted in the U.S. and loving L.A. I think I've been learning a lot from workers in Los Angeles and California, and it's been really, really valuable. So I'm not going anywhere yet. Who knows what the future holds, but I hope that our labor movements in Canada and the U.S. can continue to work together. I know there's been big fights in the tariff front and different nationalisms coming forward in the past few years under this administration. And I also think that we've formed historically quite strong connections as well. From NAFTA to even before NAFTA, we've built alliances with different unions across the globe and across borders. So I hope that we can continue that international focus. But for now, I'm firmly planted in LA.
Okay, I'll pass the word along to your folks.
Great, thank you.
How's the book doing? It hasn't been released yet, right?
It hasn't, no. We're starting to make kind of the business side of the book world is starting to come to fruition. Planning out tour dates. You know, the blurbs actually just got posted on Thursday. And so starting to get folks excited about what this book has in store for readers. I am going to be doing a book launch in Los Angeles on Thursday, November 5th at the Unionized Skylight Books in Los Feliz. So would encourage folks that are based in LA to absolutely come out to that. And even if you can't get a copy of the book through AK Press or my publisher in Canada, Between the Lines, I would definitely encourage, if you're interested in learning more about unions, picking up the book and putting in an order at your local library.
Is there anything that I've neglected to ask you that you want to impart to our listeners?
It's a great question, too. I would just say that this book is really for anyone who has had a bad day at work, who recognizes that things could be better and are curious about what the labor movement, whether it's historically or right now as we speak, is building upon. The best unions have the most involvement of their membership. And so I would encourage, if anyone is listening to this and either has a union that you see on your paycheck, but don't really know what it's doing, pick up the book and get involved. This is really the hope of this book, is that it's your invitation to join a union and start improving not only your conditions, but your coworkers and your communities.
Very good. Thank you for spending so much time with me.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
If they want to pick up your book, it's available pretty much anywhere once it launches.
Yes, October 27th, it'll be shipped. So whether it's your local bookstore or your library, go to AK Press or Between the Lines and search for Fired Up About Unions.
Thanks again, Cole.
Thank you, Dan.
Good luck.
That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory in part two of his interview with Fired Up About Unions author Cole Rockhartz. And for more information about Cole Lockhart's and her new book, you can find it at colelockharts.substack.com. That's colelockharts.substack.com.
Everybody knows the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
And finally, from the KPFK News Desk, our associate producer, Hal Lohr, brings us this morning's Working Voices update.
The representative from California has the floor.
Sing out to the president, gas man. Pumped away is your punishment.
Thank you, Marissa. Governor Gavin Newsom announced last week that the state's minimum wage will rise to $17.40 next year, a pay floor set to become the highest of any U.S. state. The pay bump will go into effect January 1st. The state's current minimum wage is $16.90. But in a news release, Newsom touted the move as a salve for working families amid high living costs and took an obvious presidential campaign-style jab at the Trump administration, saying that for years Donald Trump and Republicans have blocked efforts to raise the federal minimum wage while handing tax breaks to billionaires and big corporations. The federal minimum wage was last increased during George W. Bush's presidency when it rose from $6.55 to $7.25. But of course, opponents of any federal increase will always cite that despite record corporate profits and record high consumer prices, the fear that any wage increase will have adverse effects to the labor market, such as job losses. Federal fears notwithstanding, though, the California pay bump will go into effect starting January 1st, and at the moment, 30 states in addition to Washington, D.C., have set wage rates above the federal minimum. The state of Washington will trail close behind California in 2027 with a minimum wage of $17.13, according to data from the Department of Labor. And in New York City and three nearby counties, the minimum wage is currently $17 an hour. Since Newsom took the gubernatorial seat in 2019, the state's minimum wage has grown from $12, according to his office. Still, for a family of two working adults and two children in California, researchers at MIT estimate each adult must earn $36.38 just to cover food, childcare, healthcare, housing, and transportation, among other basic necessities. And the Trump administration has faced blowback over the protracted war with Iran that has led to a surge in gas prices across the nation, with California fuel prices topping $6 a gallon in recent months. And in the latest job numbers, the U.S. economy saw an unexpected decline in jobs during July, while the unemployment rate edged lower, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported last Friday in a snapshot that showed a slowing employment picture. Non-farm payrolls fell by a seasonably adjusted 23,000 for the month, compared with a downwardly revised 20,000 for June. The Dow Jones consensus forecast had been looking for a gain of 83,000. At the same time, the unemployment rate slipped to 1.4% as the labor force participation rate fell further to 61.4%, its lowest in more than 5 years, which is another indication that fewer Americans were working or looking for jobs. The overall drop was led by a 50,000 jobs decline in local government education and a loss of 19,000 retail jobs. Financial activities also posted a fall of 14,000, and leisure and hospitality lost 40,000 jobs, a possible consequence of the World Cup tournament ending. Worker pay also saw virtually no gain during the month, average hourly earnings increased by just 2 cents, bringing the 12-month average down to 3.2%, below the forecast increase of 3.5%, and the lowest since May 2021. And the employment-to-population rate also fell again, slipping to 58.9% for its lowest level since May 2014, an alternative job loss measure that includes discouraged workers and those holding part-time jobs for economic reasons, held steady at 7.9%. And in what can only be seen as more bad news for the U.S. economy, U.S. retail sales have slumped after splurging on the World Cup and Amazon Prime Day sales, as Americans unexpectedly cut their spending in July by the biggest amount in more than a year. Retail sales have fallen 0.6%, marking the biggest decrease since May 2025, compared with a revised gain of 0.2% in June, according to Commerce Department data released Friday, even after economists were projecting a small increase. The decline followed a notable bump in spending in April and May as Americans dipped into their government tax refunds. But the drop in spending in July has raised concerns among some economists about the resiliency of consumers who have powered the economy forward despite nagging inflation and soaring gasoline prices. The weak sales report followed unexpectedly sluggish job figures last week, and both suggest the economy could be slowing after stronger consumer and business spending in the first half of the year. Separately, consumers turned more pessimistic about the economy last month, likely driven by stubbornly high prices, according to a recent University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. Business at gas stations fell 0.9% last month, according to that report, and gas prices have been rising since the final week of July, according to the American Automobile Association. With a one-year jump of 92 cents per gallon more than Americans were paying last year at this time. So gas prices typically begin to recede in August as the driving season comes to a close, and AAA said this week that the high cost of fuel for Americans this late in the year is unprecedented. Even as new data last week showed that inflation declined slightly in July as gas and grocery prices slipped, though it is still rising more quickly than before the Iran war. Consumer prices increased 3.4% in July from a year ago, down slightly from 3.5% in June, the Labor Department said last Wednesday, a modest decline marking the second straight decrease after sharply higher gas prices actually pushed inflation to 4.2% in May, which was a three-year high. So, given the volatile economic environment, economists are closely watching how families will spend during Christmas. This is Hal Lohr with your Working Voices update.
And that's our show for this week. Once again, we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to seriously consider underwriting the show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. And also, we want to hear from you. You can email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Once again, this is Joe Ayala.
And this is Marissa Remsky.
Our special thanks to Dan McCrory, Steve Zeltzer, Gary Scott, Hal Lohr, and our guests. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a good week, everybody.
Got so much work, yeah, yeah.
KPFK and Pacifica are proud to announce that the long-running progressive public affairs program Making Contact is now produced by KPFK. Making Contact is an investigative journal dedicated to providing the public a deeper understanding of the world and the forces that govern it. This half-hour weekly show delivers incisive, vital perspectives, and you're invited to tune in. Mondays at 4 p.m., that's Making Contact, airing on and now produced by KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car. But you don't need a car to get around L.A., and we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle.